ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. So we're continuing our reading in the fifth canto. This is chapter 28, text 25, is it? 25, okay. We're still in the prose section, so I'll just read the Sanskrit. Ye tviha vai dambika dambo yogeshu pashun vishasanti tan amushmil loke vaishase narake patitan niraya patayo yata yitva vishasanti. Srila Prabhupada translates as follows. A person who in this life is proud of his eminent position and who heedlessly sacrifices animals simply for material prestige is put into the hell called Vishasana after death. There, the assistants of Yamaraj kill him after giving him unlimited pain. Please repeat. A person who in this life is proud of his eminent position and who heedlessly sacrifices animals simply for material prestige is put into the hell called Vishasana after death. There the assistants of Yamaraj kill him after giving him unlimited pain. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 41, Krishna says, Suchinam Shimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Bhajayate. Because of his previous connection with Bhakti Yoga, a man is born into a prestigious family of brahmanas or aristocrats. Having taken such a birth, one should utilize it to perfect the Bhakti Yoga. However, due to bad association, one often forgets that his prestigious position has been given to him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he misuses it by performing various kinds of so-called yogas like Kali Puja or Durga Puja, in which poor animals are sacrificed. How such a person is punished is described herein. The word Dambha Yogyeshu in this verse is significant. If one violates the Vedic instructions while performing yogya and simply makes a show of sacrifice for the purpose of killing animals, he is punishable after death. In Calcutta, there are many slaughterhouses where animal flesh is sold that has supposedly been offered in sacrifice before the goddess Kali. The Shastras enjoin that one can sacrifice a small goat before the goddess Kali once a month. Nowhere is it said that one can maintain a slaughterhouse in the name of temple worship and daily kill animals unnecessarily. Those who do so receive the punishments described herein. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Shtarne Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Pre. Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaur Bhaktivedanta. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, we're getting clear evidence that the types of sins that people think they're creating anew are actually nothing new. Right? Every generation thinks they discover illicit sex in so many ways. But it's nothing new. 5,000 years ago, Shukadeva Goswami was repeating knowledge that had been handed down for millions of years. So these sins are nothing new. This animal slaughter, illicit sex, all these different things are not new types of sins. They were well known. And not only were they well known, but the punishments for engaging, indulging in these types of sinful activities were an established fact. Again, Shukadeva Goswami is just reciting knowledge that was handed down over many, many generations of spiritually perfect beings who know these things and who accept as their duty the task of disseminating this knowledge to everyone else for our benefit. As Prabhupada said when he was discussing with his disciples, he said, actually, the spiritual master and the guru is not supposed to canvass. The tradition was the guru would sit down one place and those who were genuine spiritual seekers would go out to try to find a spiritual master to enlighten them. And then the guru, once approached, may or may not accept. But he said in Kali Yuga, because everybody is lazy in executing this prime necessity of human life, which is to cultivate spiritual knowledge, then the guru has to go out. Please come and join. Please come and join my movement. Please chant Hare Krishna. Otherwise, it's not the business of the guru to canvass looking for disciples. Generally, that's not done. So, again, we're getting this very valuable knowledge. That's ancient knowledge. It's not something new. It's handed down. And Prabhupada is continuing that tradition. Very carefully, Prabhupada selects every... When first reading of this verse, a person who in this life is proud of his eminent position, and who, my mind automatically put the word needlessly here, needlessly sacrifices animals. But Prabhupada didn't say needlessly. He said heedlessly, very carefully chosen words. Why heedlessly, not needlessly? Why? Why heedlessly? Why does Prabhupada select this particular word? Because again, as human beings, we're supposed to heed or take note of the scriptural injunctions. We're supposed to know them and take heed of them. You can do something needlessly without understanding the connection, the deeper significance of what you're doing. But heedlessly, it points out that you have to know. You're supposed to know. You're supposed to know why it's wrong to sacrifice animals simply for material prestige. And you're supposed to know the consequence of doing that, that you're going to be put into the hell called Vishasana after that. But because people, again, they're very, very... they live in a very frivolous way, very disconnected from reality. And therefore they don't know, and therefore they don't heed the warnings of the Shastra. As a matter of fact, when they hear them, they think it's just, you know, you guys are just, you know, blindly following something. So, in the purport, Prabhupada discusses what happens. This is really, really deep purport here. Krishna says, Suchinam Shimatamgi. In other words, if you fall from the path of devotional service, you get a chance again to continue. But at the same time, in this verse, it's saying that somebody who's in a prestigious position, which is normally obtained by those who fall from the yoga practice, if they heedlessly perform sacrifices of killing animals and stuff like that, then they will be punished in hell. So that was a little bit of, I had to think about that because it seems, I mean, at least my understanding was that once you take to this path, you know, you fall down, you get to continue. Nowhere did the picture of hell come into my mind. It's almost like, you know, you take to the path, okay, you don't finish, you fall down, you get a chance to continue like that. But here it's being shown that if you take to the path and you fall down and you get a nice birth, if you don't take advantage of that birth, you can actually go to hell. It's not that because you've started on the path of Krishna consciousness or yoga practice, that is just going to keep going up and up and up. You can actually go to hell. Because it's being pointed out here that a man is born into a prestigious family of brahmanas or aristocrats. Having taken such a birth, one should utilize it to perfect bhakti yoga. However, due to bad association, one often forgets that his prestigious position has been given to him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he misuses it by performing various kinds of so-called yogas, like Kali Puja. We see the connection. Recently, we were celebrating the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he actually wrote an autobiography that he gave to his son, Lalita Prasad, because his son had been asking him frequently what was, you know, his early life like. So before he left the planet, he actually wrote an autobiography. And in that autobiography, he was remembering how the village that he grew up in was such a jolly place. Everybody was happy. They were well fed. There was no anxiety. Everyone, a lot of brahmanas there. But they would perform this Kali Puja, Durga Puja, these brahmanas. And he said that gradually he came to realize that they were just looking forward to the opportunity to perform this particular sacrifice so they could eat goat flesh. Because ordinarily, I guess they didn't eat meat, but on this particular sacrifice, they ate meat. So this is, again, they're doing it supposedly on the scriptural injunctions, but if you misuse that and just wantonly kill the animals in the name of sacrifice, then you'll be sent to this hell called Vishasana. In other words, it's not a one-way street. It's not a one-way ticket. Due to our free will, we can not heed scriptural injunctions and fall very low to the point of being punished. Punished and punished by the disturbance of Yamaraj. I was thinking also in this section that every moment practically some living entity is being brought in front of Yamaraj to be punished, to be judged and then punished. And then when you get put into these different kind of hells, there's so many assistants there that take charge of every single soul. So technically speaking, there are probably more Yamadutas in this universe than anybody else. Seriously, because so many living entities go to these different hells, and every hell has all these assistants of Yamaraj who joyfully, this is their duty, they joyfully punish. So there must be more of them than anybody else. Because practically, everybody is going to go to hell. And there's so many of these Yamadutas there waiting to punish them. Not a very nice picture. Now, this is giving us scriptural evidence of reincarnation. But recently, I received a very nice story that gives empiric evidence of this reincarnation. Many of you know Rajendranandan Prabhu and his wife, Rasalila, the dancer. So she has a sister who is also a devotee. Her name is Abhay Mudra. She was previously married to Krishnadas Kaviraj, the pujari here, but now she's remarried to a proper disciple named Patita Pavana. And they're both astrologers. So they put out this monthly astrology newsletter. Some or other, I didn't ask to be on this list. Some or other, I'm on their mailing list, and I've been getting this newsletter. And I just received the recent one, the latest one yesterday, in which there's a very, very wonderful story that gives empiric evidence of reincarnation. It's directly connected to us. So if you don't mind, I'm going to relate this story. In 1973, a young brahmachari, his name was Raghava Das Brahmachari, he passed away. Very unusual circumstances. He had joined at the age of 17 in Scotland. And he was shaken up by the fact that his father committed suicide. He went home one day to see the father hanging by a rope. So that really shook him up, and he got some books from devotees, and he became a devotee. Joined in Scotland. He got accepted by Srila Prabhupada for initiation, was given the name, and then the very next day he was supposed to have a fire sacrifice by Revatinandan Swami. But unfortunately, as has happened many times in ISKCON, he was in the backseat of a car being driven by another devotee. There was a car accident, and he left his body. Can you imagine? The very day after Prabhupada accepts you as a disciple, you leave your body. The very next day, you leave your body. I can relate to how this happens, because I know when I had just joined in New York in 73 and some or other, I don't know, can't remember all the circumstances. The first few months were kind of cloudy for me. But late one night, Gopijana Balava, the then temple president, who is no longer with us now, he asked me to go with him to drop off a devotee at the airport. And this was late at night, so about 10 o'clock or so, if I remember correctly, we were coming back. It was a small car. I think it was a VW Beetle. So we're driving on the highway. I fall asleep, and I wake up just in time to see that he's sleeping and the car is heading for the, you know, there's a big divider between both sides. Car is heading for the divider, so I scream, "Krishna!" And then he wakes up and... So I could totally relate to the story. This young brahmachari is in the back seat of the car. Another devotee driving, they have an accident. The driver survives, but he died. So then I'm going to read the letter that Prabhupada sent. He said, regarding the auto accident, just hold a condolence meeting for Raghava Das Brahmachari and pray for his soul to Krishna for giving him a good chance for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Certainly Krishna will give him a good place to take birth where he can again begin in Krishna conscious activities. That is sure. But we offer our condolences to a departed soul separated from a Vaishnava. Do you know that there must be prasadam distributed? 3 days after the demise of a Vaishnava, a function should be held for offering the departed soul and all others prasadam. This is the system. And this is a letter from Srila Prabhupada to Revarinandan Maharaj. It's dated 14 November 1973. So, the reason this is in this newsletter is because there's a devotee now in England. Her name is Ratnavali Devi Dasi. She was born in 1975 in London. And she said the first contact she remembers with Krishna consciousness was her parents had a Prabhupada book somewhere in a drawer. And she pulled it out and she saw the picture of Prabhupada and she immediately felt connected to Prabhupada. Then, I think she said she was born in 75. In 1992, she was brutally attacked in a park. Some madman just came at her with a stick with nails in it and was beating and beating her. And she was screaming, but nobody was coming to help. So she heard a voice inside that said, just play dead. So she did that. She just pretended that she had died. And the guy left her. Then later on that same year, she met devotees and she got a book. And because of that book, she went to the London temple, Soho Street temple, and she saw Radha Lalandeshwara. And she said she immediately felt connected to them, and she somehow or other connected them to the voice that saved her. So she, on the spot, so 92, 75, that's 17 years old, matching this brahmachari. So 17 years old, she immediately decided, I'm going to dedicate my life to Krishna consciousness. She had been born in a Hindu family, pious. They had, you know, altar at home with all the gods and everything, but not necessarily Vaishnavas. So she was raised in a kind of a pious atmosphere. She heard the names of God, but had not at that point yet become a devotee. But at this point now, she decided she's going to become a devotee. And then she starts having these dreams about Scotland and about brahmacharis and stuff like that. And then she meets Tribhuvanath, and she starts going out on Harinam with him, with other devotees. And she said somewhere or other, she was playing this African drum that somebody had given her, I guess, and somewhere or other, he just brought her to the front and made her stay there with the brahmacharis playing this drum. She felt very shy and kind of out of place, but he insisted that she stay there. And then gradually, she started getting more and more, you know, feeling that she had lived before. She was a brahmachari and this kind of, she started getting these visions of this park in Scotland and the temple there and all this kind of stuff. So she decided to approach her spiritual master, Bhakti Charu Maharaj, and tell him all this. And he told her, yes, quite possibly you should trace it out. So she went to Scotland, and, you know, just everything just kind of fell in place. She met the devotee who was driving the car. For years, this devotee had a stricture that nobody should talk to him about that accident. He would not discuss it with anybody. He didn't want anybody. But somewhere when she came, he acquiesced and he allowed her to discuss the whole thing with him. And to make a long story short, I can forward the newsletter to you if anybody's interested in reading the whole story. But based on empiric evidence, it seems that she was that brahmachari who died in 73. Now, it's a little interesting because ordinarily, Prabhupada says in purport to that verse, Shuchanam Shimatam Gehe, that there are two types of fallen devotees. One who falls after a very short time and one who falls after long practice. He says, normally those who fall after a very short time, they go to the heavenly planets and enjoy for a very, very long time. And then they take birth on earth, either in a brahminical family or a wealthy family. So, based on that, it seems that this devotee, even though he was a young devotee and had just joined, probably was it a bad soul because he didn't obviously disappear for a very long time. Came back in 2 years. Another interesting fact of the story is that Bhakti Charu Maharaj teasingly said to Ratnavali one day, he said, so who is that woman you were meditating on when you died? So when she went to Scotland, she was trying to figure that out also. So she approached the wife of the devotee who had been driving the car. She didn't give the name of the devotee, but And sure enough, she remembered that this Raghavadas Brahmachari, he had started complaining that he had felt attraction for this Indian body girl. And it was disturbing his japa. So we can see all this, how everything is connected. We have to be so careful how we perform our devotional service. We have to be so careful how we live life, because it is true. It is not just a fairy tale. That whatever you think about at that moment of death, that is going to take you to your next situation. You can see in this case, this brahmachari died in a car accident, but at the last moment, he was thinking about this Indian body Mataji that he was attracted to. So sure enough, takes birth in a Hindu family as a woman. But still very much attracted to Harinam. That was his main thing. He used to go out on Harinam with Tribhuvanath. Even though he was from Scotland, he came to London and he was going out. And he saw these deities, Radhalandanishwar, and he was attracted to them. So in the next life, comes back as a woman, attracted to Harinam, attracted to those same deities. So we have to be very, very careful how we execute our devotional service. That, yes, we may be given a chance in the future. Well, you see, she did not have an easy life. It's not that she was born and immediately, you know, No, she had problems in life. She has still health problems. She was attacked like that. So Prabhupada used to say, don't come back. Coming back to this material world is a very risky proposal. And the biggest risk is that even though we get a chance to take birth in a brahminical family, even a devotee family, yesterday, just coincidentally, Jagani Vas was asking me, he was saying, Prabhu, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He said, how is it that so many of these devotees, these kids that are born into ISKCON, and they don't even come to the temple, they live right here in the community, they don't even bother to come to the temple. Why is that happening? How is that so? So we had a bit of a discussion about that, that it's very, very important. My answer is that it's very important to have as close a community as possible. Some people don't like that. You have set up a closed community. But that is what's needed for the children to have a chance. Just like Mayapur. We need more Mayapurs where it's a closed community. You have to make an effort to go outside into the rest of the world. Right? Mayapur is like a little city. You go there and you could be there for months and never leave the place. So that's the kind of environment you need for kids to survive in Kali Yuga. If they live in this kind of environment, where they walk out their door and they're already associating with the karmis. There is no gurukula for them to go to where they can get proper Krishna consciousness inculcation. When that's absent, then of course they start going to karmi schools from the beginning of life, then they're not going to be attracted to Krishna consciousness. It's going to be very difficult to keep them, maintain any attraction there. It's very important for the children to be totally insulated from the material world as long as possible and to be amongst devotees who are enthusiastically performing devotional service. If the parents are not enthusiastic, they may be chanting, but if it's like, you know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I'm also shopping online, or I'm, you know, watching the news. If you're in that kind of environment, you're going to say, well, I'm just going to skip the chanting part and just go straight to the YouTube part and go straight to Bali, are you trying to tell us something? They'll go straight to the Facebook part. They'll go straight to the movies part. If the parents are more attracted to the latest movie than they are to chanting their japa, of course the kids are going to say, I'm going to forget the japa. I'll just go to the movies. So it's very important for the children to be raised in an insular environment where they're not exposed as long as possible. As long as possible, they're not exposed to all the nonsense that happens in the general society. It's very important. Otherwise, again, there's very little hope. If they're born and raised in this kind of environment, I remember when we used to have our little gurukul here, the kids used to come to the temple every day. Now that there's no gurukul, forget it. They still get together every day, but they get together for skateboarding and this and that. They don't get together for coming to the temple. So this story, you know, whether we accept it or not, and many advanced Vaishnavas are accepting the facts of this story, Bhakti Charu Maharaj accepts it. His disciple, Ratnavali Devi Dasi, was actually Raghavadas Brahmachari in her previous life. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter so much if we can trace out our previous life. We have to look at our current situation. We've been given this wonderful opportunity by Srila Prabhupada. Everything is there. The association of devotees, the temples, the deities, so much opportunity for distributing This knowledge, just like recently, you know, one of the things that I do here is I go out on these college and high school preaching programs. So we were just in Palos Verdes High School, very wealthy community. Myself, Narantara, Shastrakrit, Kumari Gopi Devidasi, and Swarnavali. We went to this school. And wonderful kids. The teachers, wonderful. He invites us every year. The kids are wonderful. Narantara had them up and chanting and dancing, and they were really getting into it. And they asked great questions. At the end, they took almost all, every single copy of Krishna Reservoir of Pleasure we had. They ate all the cookies. So this is the benefit of going out. These children out there in Palos Verdes, they've taken birth in Srimatam, wealthy families. And they should understand that it's a very, very, very good opportunity. When you're in a wealthy family, then you don't have to worry about money. You can concentrate on what is the purpose of life and how to achieve it. So it's very important for us to go out and give these books. We see the very first contact Ratnavali had was a book of Prabhupada, and it immediately attracted her. And then after that, she got more books that took her to the temple, and she became a devotee. So this book distribution, this prasadam distribution, everything that we do has such far-reaching consequences. We can't even imagine. We can't even imagine. If you talk to some of the devotees, as I've done, that joined in the early days in Russia, for instance, they didn't even have, maybe there was one book that was then hand copied, but still the potency was there. So we're so fortunate. We have shelves and libraries full of the books. We don't have to scrounge to come up with a Nectar of Devotion or the complete set of Srimad Bhagavatam. These devotees in the early days of Russia, they had just Bhagavad Gita and sometimes only one chapter handwritten that somebody had copied and distributed. And still they became devotees. That's the potency of Prabhupada's preaching. So we are so fortunate. We have all the books. We have so much prasadam here in New Dwarka. We have beautiful deities. We should take advantage for our own personal advancement. As Prabhupada said, why come back? He said, don't make me come back for you. Once a devotee asked Prabhupada, is it true that the spiritual master has to come back if the devotee doesn't finish? Prabhupada said, yes, generally that's the case. But don't make me come back. Finish up. Finish up. Be very serious. Finish up your business in this lifetime. And go back to home, back to Godhead. So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Yes, Prem Sankirtan Prabhu.
There is one last sentence in a translation of this verse. There, the assistance of Yamaraj killed him after giving him unlimited pain. So my understanding is then why actually they're killing, how Yamaraj can kill them, because my understanding is they have a, you know, subtle body, and subtle body always goes with soul, wherever soul go. So it is mentioned only in this verse that they're just killed. You know, so I don't understand.
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, it's just like nobody's ever killed anyway. We feel we're being killed because we're attached to this gross material body. Therefore, when it's time to give up this gross material body, I'm dying, help, save me. I'm attached to this gross material body. So when you go to the hellish planets, you're in your subtle body, but you're attached to that subtle body. So when they come again, you feel like you're being killed in that subtle body. We have experience sometimes. We leave our bodies at night, the gross body we leave on the bed, and we're in the subtle body somewhere, and we get attacked by some other subtle being. And even though I'm in a subtle body, I should be able to stand up to that person and, you know, fight them or whatever. But I'm so attached, I'm thinking that I am that body, that subtle body, that I immediately become fearful and I'm screaming and carrying on in my dream. We call it a nightmare. If you're in a subtle body, right, you shouldn't be afraid. Just like any other subtle body can do so many subtle things, we should feel we can do the same thing too. We're also in subtle bodies, but we are so attached and so ignorant of our real spiritual nature that we become fearful. And we scream and yell, help, save me, I'm being attacked. So it's the same thing. Whether you're attached to the gross body or attached to the subtle body, attachment and ignorance is what causes fear. And therefore, they appear to be killed, they appear to die. But there's no real death for the soul in any case. Whether you're attached to the subtle body or the gross body or both or whatever situation you're in, there is no death for the soul. But out of ignorance and attachment, on that plane of existence, they feel they're going to be killed, and the servants of Yamaraj make sure And you feel that way because that's their job, to really scare the heck out of you. Satchitanoi Prabhu.
Yeah, Prabhu, in regards to the question that you were answering to Jananivas Prabhu, my little observation was that we haven't created just yet a natural environment for these kids, and we're living in a society that's overkilling them. And I was also remembering that Srila Prabhupada, in one of the seven purposes of his society, he mentioned, because you also mentioned, to bring the members closer. He says, to bring the members closer together and to teach a natural, simpler, natural way of life. That will solve a lot of problems. And we're working on that. Still a lot of work to do. Because that also will give response to the, you know, animal killing. Like yesterday we went in Harinam and I saw the, there's a, I guess, PETA organization. They have these movies about how horrible it is to kill animals. And I was thinking they're doing something good. Of course, some of them, they're not strictly followers. They might even eat meat. I don't know. I mean, they don't believe in Krishna, some of them. But, yeah. So that's the area that we have to work on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very difficult to achieve that simpler, natural way of life in the cities. It's very difficult. The cities are really meant to be preaching outposts, and communities of devotees with children should really live more in a rural farming kind of community. That's the natural way to do it. But it can be done in the city. I remember Subhas several years ago was studying some of the Jewish communities around here. Because, you know, they do that. They, some or other, they set up large communities of like-minded people, these Jewish people. They all live together, block after block after block. It's just nothing but them. And they have their, you know, their temple, and they have their everything that they control. And so it's possible to do that. But it requires vision, and it requires commitment. And it has to start, obviously, with the parents. It's not that the child is going to take birth and figure out what to do. The parents have to figure it out. Parents have to have it together so that, like you said, a child is born into this environment and they just naturally follow. Prabhupada said if the parents enthusiastically perform devotional service, then the children will pick up on that. If the parents get up every day and come to Mangalartik and chant enthusiastically, then the kids will want to do that. They'll want to come here and do that. But if the parents, if it's a drag for the parents to perform their devotional service, if they're always showing that it's a drag and they're not really into it, then what kind of mood do you think the kids are going to pick up? They're going to pick up, yeah, this is a drag. It's a drag. It's not natural to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning. It's not natural to be walking around with that bag on your hand chanting Hare Krishna all the time. If, you know, that's the mood they pick up. So of course you're not going to want to do it. So the parents have to be enthusiastic. And you're not going to be enthusiastic if you're not getting some taste. So we owe it to ourselves, every one of us, to make sure we acquire that taste. We know it's not necessarily there in the beginning, but if you go on, chipping away all that ignorance. Yesterday, Jagaranga Prabhu was reminding us that the spiritual body is actually one of the components it's made of is bliss. That's why we want to be happy. One of the components, Satchidananda. So chit is there also, knowledge. The spiritual body is actually made of knowledge. So ignorance is actually foreign to us. So we should always struggle against ignorance. We should always want to know. We should always want to know more and more and more. What to do, what not to do. How to preach, how not to preach. We should always want to accumulate more and more knowledge. It's actually an uncovering, because knowledge, chit, is one of the components of the spiritual body. So if we expose ourselves to the knowledge that Prabhupada has given us, and if we keep ourselves internally and externally clean, it's natural that more and more knowledge just blossoms in your person, because it's there. Okay, we can stop here. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.